You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 314 of the Columbia Calling podcast. This week's guests are coming in from Cali and from London to talk about Breedco. And that's a medicinal cannabis company based out of Cali. So we'll be talking about this new industry taking hold here in Colombia, and of course, where Colombia can position herself very importantly in this field and become a leader in the industry. So, very interesting show coming up for you. Also, I'm glad to say that Adrian Alsimer of Columbia Reports is back this week. He's had a heavy week again, but managed to provide us with the news segment. All of those of you out there who've signed up and have just given us some money for the Patreon campaign to continue the growth and improvement of Columbia Calling, thank you very much. If you haven't and wish to throw a couple of dollars a month at us, please do so. Patreon.com, Columbia Calling. You can find the links. You can pledge as little as $2 a month to help us out here at the podcast. So listener figures have been increasing and increasing after the obvious December dip after holidays. And I'm very happy to say again, we've breached the 10,000 per week downloads from the United States. Canada has dropped a little bit. The UK has climbed. Colombia has climbed. And Australia has remained more or less the same. So please keep on sharing the word, spreading the news about this website out and about, website and podcast out and about there. And we will continue to provide excellent information about Columbia. So thank you again. And I will leave you in the capable hands of Adrian Alsimer and the news segment. And we'll be back with the COO and one of the board members of Breedco and the third segment of this show. Thank you for listening.
My name is Adrian Alsimer, and this is news for Columbia Calling for March 3, 2020. The United Nations triggered the fury of President Ivan Duque after a damning human rights report. The president accused the UN of intruding national sovereignty for recommending reforms to the police, which committed mass human rights violations during anti-government protests last year. Members of Duque's far-right Democratic Center Party went as far as calling for the expulsion of the UN Human Rights Office from the country. Non-government organizations, on the other hand, welcomed the report that exposed the government's complicity in human rights violations and military ties to illegal armed groups. The UN seemed not impressed by Duque's tirade and said on Saturday that it will continue to work with the Colombian government and citizens. The annual human rights report is only the latest of a series that exposes the gross human rights violations committed under Duque's watch. UN peace observers have been increasingly explicit about the government's refusal to comply with the 2016 peace deal and its effects. The UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights Defenders is set to release his report later this week. According to Special Rapporteur Michael Forrest, he wasn't even allowed to enter the country after the government didn't like his preliminary report from 2018. Duque's response to the UN reports highlight tensions between the government and the international community that have been building since the president took office. The Supreme Court forged its way out of an institutional crisis caused by an outgoing magistrate who sabotaged the election of a replacement. The retirement of magistrate Ariel Salazar left the 23-seat court without the 16 magistrates it needs to elect a replacement. The 15 remaining members agreed the crisis situation merited a 12 of 15 majority to elect replacements and elected 7 magistrates. The decision is likely to be challenged before the State Council, but allows the court to function fully until this body comes to a ruling. Colombia's ambassador to Uruguay is in trouble after United States authorities found that cocaine passing through American airports was produced at his family property. Ambassador Fernando San Clemente said he was the victim in the drug trafficking scandal, his second one this year. The former director of Colombia's Civil Aviation Authority was already tied to alleged Sinaloa cartel activity at Bogota's El Dorado airport between 2005 and 2010. An attempt to censor a victim's campaign linking active and retired army generals to the execution of civilians backfired spectacularly. After a Bogota court ordered the victims' organizations to take an image linking General Marcos Evangelista Pinto to 45 homicides off the internet, tens of thousands of people began publishing the image online. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia, and we have very special guests on this episode 314 of the Colombia Calling podcast. One of them is in London, England. The other one's in Cali in the southwest of Colombia. This is pretty cool to have them all connected. And we're talking to high-up members of the board, the CEO of a company called Breedco. Breedco works in medicinal marijuana. And we've got Sebastian Gomez, who's the CEO of Breedco. He's in Cali. And we've got Don Bellamy, who's in London, and he's a member on the board. So welcome on Colombia Calling, and thank you for getting in touch with us.
Oh, well, thank you very much for the invitation. So, Richard, I'll introduce myself first. I'm Don Bellamy, speaking to you from cold London at the moment. I wish I was in sunnier climes, but this is where I am. I am a board member of a new venture in medicinal cannabis called Breedco. Mm-hmm. It's existed maybe 4 years, 5 years. I think Sebastian will correct me exactly. But over the last 2 or 3 years, we've been very, very active in growing the company, trying to secure funding, and trying to launch the company as a real commercial venture. I came on board maybe about 18 months ago. I have global experience in the cannabis sector around the world, working in some of the largest companies in the sector, such as Canopy Growth. I was very interested in Breedco from the very start for some of the reasons which I'm sure we'll speak about now. But I'll hand the word over to Sebastian now, who will give you a few more details about the company and where we sit in terms of Colombian regulation.
Perfect. Thank you. Sebastian.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Richard, for the invitation. Well, Breedco started back in 2016, once we managed to see the opportunity of the cannabis industry. Now, we've focused on the pharmaceutical production, and especially we started because the Colombian regulation started quite early compared to many other South American countries. And at the same time, since Colombia's got kind of a bad reputation worldwide, the Colombian government back then started complying with every single United Nations request. Now, we are talking about a controlled substance. Now, let me tell you that there are plenty of controlled substances, such as, for example, cocaine itself. Whenever you use drops, you know, when the... Can you help me out with this, Don? Ophthalmologist. Mm-hmm. When you go to the ophthalmologist, you've got to open your iris. Now, those drops, they contain pharmaceutical cocaine. Mm-hmm. Now, the United Nations created an agency called the INCB, which is International Narcotics Control Board. Now, since Colombia has a bad reputation, the Colombian government back then started complying with the INCB's requests. Now, that's not very frequent within the countries which regulated cannabis, but Colombia did it because we wanted to guarantee the international community that we were not doing a Pablo Escobar thing. So basically, in order to comply with the international regulations, we need to do it as well, let's say, with intellectual property related to genetics, which is the reason why we are registering our genetics, and all the Colombian companies must do it before they want or they pretend to go operative. So that's the reason why Colombia is doing an amazing job, because it's securing to the international community that basically we are doing things properly. Now, the internal regulation is a bit complex. Now, everyone at this point feels a bit uncertain about the Colombian regulation, because there have been many articles stating that we are moving slow. But let me just give you a brief about this. Now, when a country legalizes cannabis, it tells you what are you doing. But in order to move forward, you need to regulate, which tells you how are you doing things. So let's just take an example, Chile. Chile back then, with Michelle Bachelet, the president back then, she legalized cannabis. But then the next president, Mr. Sebastián Piñera, did not regulate it. So he did not tell how do you need grow your cannabis plants, how you need to do your logistics, and several things related to intellectual property and many others that need to be detailed. Now, when that happened, that's when the cannabis industry couldn't move forward, and then it all stopped. Now, many people think that this is a thing that happens from within 6 months. But if you want to regulate, you cannot just do it internally, because your country signed international agreements, so your regulation has to comply with those agreements. So you need to go all the way to the smallest detail, such as the package, and many, many things. Now, the Colombian government is moving forward, and we've seen that this new president, he's shown that we've seen new decrees and new cannabis regulations within, let's say, cosmetics, veterinary, within human products, what we normally call in Spanish fórmulas magistrales, magistral formulas, I guess. It was just translating. So at least we've been looking at the way these controlled substances products are being regulated. Now, let me tell you that I went to Canada and on December last year, and I was pretty amazed that within the Canadian, I got to talk to the Canadian companies, and they didn't mention that they have to register their genetics. Now, all these Colombian government efforts in terms of regulating all the way down to the smallest details are a very competitive advantage for us, because let's say a European LP licensed producer wants to grow cannabis, they need to use registered genetics. They cannot use, let's say, they cannot go to a grow shop in Amsterdam and buy any type of seats they want. Instead, the European Union requests, and specifically the EMA, which is the European Medical Agencies, requests to them that they use registered genetics. Mm-hmm. Now, the more regulated we are, the more competitive at the same time. But this regulation doesn't happen from one day to another. Now, if any European company wants to use Canadian genetics, they can't do it because they are not registered. So I know and I understand that regulation may be considered to be a slow process, at least from the articles in the press. But I understand that this type of industry needs to be detailed in order to give transparency to the consumers, the governments, and all the healthcare experts, which definitely need to get a product which guarantees that it's standardized. Now, standardization is a very important thing to happen because we are talking about THC, a psychoactive molecule, and pharmaceutical products, also medicinal products, which need to be standardized. You can't get, let's say, a product which it states that it contains 8% of THC, and then once you take it, it's got 22. That shouldn't happen. So we are talking about controlled substances which need to be highly regulated. And this regulation, as I mentioned you, takes time and at the same time needs to comply with the international treaties. That's basically the Colombian context. But let me tell you that the present government is moving forward, and the way of showing it is that last year we had regulations coming out on different types of four different types of products. So we are moving forward.
Sebastian, just if maybe I could just summarize this from the perspective of, you know, an external person looking onto this, you know, companies like Breedco who want to do the right thing are completely in favor of government regulation, government control, governments doing the right thing in terms of the international bodies which control cannabis, which are basically the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. So the problem isn't that there is regulation. On the contrary, we like this because this provides a playing field where you know what the rules are and where foreign customers can come and they should know the standard of what they're purchasing, et cetera, et cetera. We have some issues about how slowly the regulation is actually being applied and how difficult it is to get licenses, et cetera, et cetera. But in essence, I think all of us at Breedco are in favor of the government, first of all, understanding that there is an opportunity for medical cannabis in Colombia, and secondly, trying its best to comply with every global standard which there is, and there are quite a few, and thirdly, trying to regulate us all in a new and growing sector.
Mm-hmm. It's positive. I mean, this is very positive indeed, and I didn't expect to hear that the current government was, you know, creating these restrictions and requirements and is actually pro, let's say, the industry. Really, I hadn't read anything to that effect at all. And if we step back, and we're hearing about Breedco, and Breedco is, you know, obviously, you know, ticking all the right boxes, doing all the right things to get ahead. But where are we in Colombia in terms of the industry, the medicinal cannabis industry overall in Colombia? I mean, is Breedco positioning itself at the top of the industry? Are there lots of players already? What's the competition like?
Well, there aren't many players, but let me tell you that Colombia's got professional people here doing amazingly. Now you've got companies already exporting. Now let me remind you that you cannot export buds, flowers from Colombia, because the Colombian regulation states that you need to do some sort of extraction. Mm-hmm. Now, in order for you, so that basically makes you, or is a requirement for you to build a pharmaceutical or a laboratory. Now, laboratories tend to cost a lot of money and demand a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Now, since we've got plenty of pharmaceutical companies having presence in Colombia, such as Bayer, Sanofi, Aventis, Novartis, and the biggest players, there are definitely experts knowing how to handle this type of laboratories and logistics and everything that is required. Now, there are very interesting players. If I may mention one of them, there is one that no one talks about them, but there is Avicanna, which is from the Davon family, Davila Bondano family. They brought important, very good experts from the pharmaceutical company. But you've got on the other side players like people who were talking decades ago here in Colombia about the benefits of cannabis. And then you've got a company like Pideca, with Colombian and an Italian master grower doing amazing in Bogota. And there may be about 10 companies doing an interesting operation, very creative, doing an extensive research. And I consider that Britco is also one of these companies, because it's not just about creativity, it's also about complying with the law, which is a massive task to do. Therefore, you need a compliance team and experts such as Don Bellamy and the rest of our crew, which already have expertise and experience within the pharmaceutical sector. I myself worked previously with Sanofi, Aventis, Roche, and other pharmaceutical companies. So we get to understand how big the investment needs to be done, and also handling the resources properly in order to go and to make a profitable business, which is quite complex because, as you mentioned, this is a just recent business. Even though it is recent in Colombia, it is also recent worldwide, and there are many companies with different approaches. And right now, we are just starting to see that the most viable and the most profitable companies, if you just look at the stock exchange, are the ones who focus in the medicinal sector and not within the recreational sector. So let's say GW Pharmaceuticals, a British company, is one of the most profitable since they focus at attending the GMPs and the higher medicinal standards.
Mm-hmm. Don, you're the expert, as Sebastian says. What makes Colombia special for this kind of cannabis crop for medicinal use?
Well, it starts off with geography. Colombia is blessed by being in the right part of the world, the right sort of climate, the right sort of soil, and the cannabis plant is actually indigenous to Colombia to begin with. So in terms of the capacity that the country has to be able to grow high quality cannabis, it's perfect, it's ideal. And I think this is where the government's interest actually starts, because I think the government perceived wisely a few years ago that rather than being afraid of this as a potential industry, Colombia actually had the opportunity to play a leadership position in this, you know? So there is a lot of land, there is a lot of agricultural know-how, and here is a high-value crop which is actually in demand around the world at the moment. There is actually a global undersupply of high-grade medical cannabis. So the starting point is very good, you know. You can understand why those in government decided that this is an interest in an industry that's worth betting on. Mm-hmm. The next step, as Sebastian has explained very well, is you have to obviously regulate it, because there are lots of, you know, this isn't the easiest of industries. It needs control, it needs regulation, it needs for you to know what you are doing, how this is being given, and to what standards. Mm-hmm. And to its credit, the government has tried to impose very high standards on everybody, right? So there are several ways in which you can produce cannabis as a product to consume, right? And some of them are not the sorts of things that Colombian breeders are interested in doing, you know? Mm-hmm. If what you want to do is just produce some kind of flower for someone to just enjoy and smoke or whatever it is, and you want to export it to whatever country may allow it for recreational purposes, that's one thing. But what we choose to do is to grow to the highest possible standards, be compliant with the strictest of regulations around the world, and become, because we're not there yet, but become a reliable supplier of high-grade quality medical cannabis. We do that because we believe that's the best way to get sustainable revenues. Mm-hmm. That's where we think the best advantage lies for Colombia. But that, of course, is a difficult route, because it means that you have to do a lot of investment up front in your infrastructure, in your processes, in your standards, in the training of your people. You have to be ultra compliant of all the requirements of government, and that's a long journey. That's a long and difficult journey, which is why, you know, you asked how many people are trying to do this. I would say quite easily, I'd say, you know, hundreds of people are trying to do it in Colombia. Maybe tens of people are understanding what the standard actually needs to be to do it properly. Mm. And of those, a very few handful of them are actually fully financed now to the point of being able to export.
Wow. You touched on this point that's really important, is investment. And it's tough to walk into a bank here and say, I need a loan for investment in a cannabis plant. But I'm sure you get your investment. I mean, you're the guy, you go around. Don, investors internationally are interested, I imagine. I mean, more than interested.
Yes, and so we have several people in the company who are very active trying to bring in investors of all types. You know, we have small investors, we have medium investors, we have large Colombian investors, and we're trying to get some very large international investors. Mm. So I'm one of many people who on a weekly basis present Breedco as an opportunity to people.
Wow.
And I'll hand the word over to Sebastian, but what I will say is that briefly, I've encountered no issue on the global market in terms of selling Colombia as a place to grow medical cannabis. I think it's more than accepted that some of the characteristics that we have spoken about exist in Colombia. And there's been quite a bit of foreign investment which has come into the country exactly for this purpose. Okay. That doesn't mean it's easy to get someone to put many, many millions of dollars into a company in Colombia. And we have been working hard at this for some time. We think we are getting some success now. But you know, it's a day-to-day battle. It's about the quality of your plan and then making everybody comfortable with the fact that this is Colombia. And that actually this isn't something to be feared, but it's actually something to be encouraged. Sebastian, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Well, yes. First of all, that one of the benefits from this country, and since we are talking about a plant, it's obviously the sunshine. And since we are based in the equator line, you normally get 12 hours sunlight and 12 hours night dark, which is what this plant needs and requires in order to flower. Now, that's the good part, but let me just go a bit down to the bottom. And the big risk here is humidity. The reason why is because, you know, as everyone knows, bacteria and pathogens, they love to grow especially on warm places and humid places. Mm-hmm. So Colombia is also a very humid country. Now, that's a risk normally not mentioned. And the way of complying and dealing with that is what Don mentioned, which is building everything by using the highest standards. Now, when you look to Japanese GACPs, good agricultural and collection practices, you get to find out that they normally do not use wood. The reason why is because wood tends to accumulate humidity within it. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you've got plenty of pathogens growing inside your crops. Now, that basically is a way of dealing with things, but whenever you get to see many Colombians, many Colombian companies, you get to find out that they've got wood within their facilities, because it's very common for us. Now, we need to use and to grow by the highest standards if we want to reach the European markets, where you can get paid from, depending on the season, but from 15,000 all the way up to 45,000 euros per liter. That's a big amount and of money. And now I really think that this is a very interesting business. And basically that companies such as ours are located on a place with low humidity, nice solar radiation, right next to an international airport, because you may imagine Richard having to carry 1,000 liters, that's basically 45 million euros, and then being, let's say, 300 kilometers away from the closest international airport. Now, that basically is a very high risk. Now, the European medical agency requests you that you cannot transport that by using a helicopter. Now, you've got to go by land. So you have to make a very detailed plan whenever it comes to plan a suitable and a profitable business. Mm. Now, Colombia's got many advantages, such as a highly regulated law detailing everything, an amazing sunlight. I'm based in Cali, so by the way, I am from Bogota, I'm not from Cali. You know, we did kind of the opposite. We did an extensive research over the Colombian territory in order to find the suitable place which basically has the best conditions. And later on, I moved to Cali. It's very, very sunny every day. I'm not used to this warm weather, you know, having to use a shirt every day and walking with 32 degrees. I guess our plants love that, but not myself, shamefully. But, so it's a very complex business. Mm-hmm. And the more you go to the detail and you plan everything, you can be in the exact place, but you can also be in the wrong place if you do not understand the law, understand the context, the risks, security, humidity, and everything else, like solar radiation. Yeah.
Well, I mean, those figures that you've quoted us are kind of incredible. And I just wanted to sort of talk about the actuality, the current situation in Colombia. And now, as you are a dedicated company, you know, focused on medicinal cannabis production, that keeps you out of the circle of, let's say, the bandit groups and so on and so forth. You are, I mean, they're not interested in your crop because you are doing things legitimately, because you are right there at the airport. They are, you haven't had any trouble, I think, as I'm getting at. You're not in a mira. You're not under the microscope from these groups. You're not at any risk, Sebastian.
Well, you've got to lower your risk. Now, that's one variable, but that we obviously considered when we, in our case, we made an extensive research throughout 1 year, and that was one of the variables we analyzed. Like, the place we are located, it's a very rare place because there hasn't been any deaths or, yeah, killings within 117 years. That's very rare worldwide.
Yeah.
It's a town called Vigis, and it's a very peaceful place. Now, when we had to choose the place, we also considered to be 20 minutes from the international airport, because we may be located on the peaceful, on a peaceful place, but then having to carry everything, you know, through a very nasty area. So that's an important thing to consider, and not to be in the middle of no man's land, you know. So, yeah, it's very important to analyze that, as well as knowing all the logistics involved, like all the way down to the airport details, because see, even though these groups are not interested in our crops, they prefer doing it probably, you know, in Cauca or many other regions. They basically are interested at what they call, putting their load within your exports.
Yeah.
So you need to know very closely how an airport works inside of it in order to prevent something like that to happen, you know. So the type of container you use, you need to know it very closely, because if you just have one small space, they can load their
illicit product.
Yes.
I think, Richard, it's obviously a factor of being in Colombia. Everybody knows. And if we are as successful as I'm sure we're going to be, then obviously the day will come when somebody is going to probably try something. So we obviously have to build security into everything that we're doing, and we are doing that. Some of the security has been built in terms of the location that Sebastian has told you about. But that doesn't mean that there won't be other things too. I mean, we're not naive to not realize that anything of high value is a target, right? So we're just going to have to be very, very careful. And I'm sure we will be. And we've done all sorts of preparations in terms of that to make this company not just compliant of everything it does, but safe as well.
Right. There you go. If your investors are listening and future investors are listening, you know these guys are legit. it's been clarified. So let's, I mean, we've got to wind it down. We could talk forever, but we've got to wind it down. What would you say then, either one of you can answer, but the target market for your company? Europe, North America, or are we now talking only of, let's say, multinational companies? I mean, the economies have changed so much. It's not directed just at the UK or just at France. Are you going for like Sanofi, or are you going for Roche? And finally, so this is my last two questions. In Colombia, and so this is probably more directed at Sebastian, how do you deal with palanca and rosca, you know, the, let's say, political favorites and the people who want to get in there, in inverted commas, commissions from all of this? So perhaps Don first and then Sebastian.
Yeah, okay. So I'll have a go at the international market question, and then I'll hand the word over to Sebastian. So I think we're quite clear about where we want our end-use customer to be. We are looking at the countries with the highest types of regulation to allow imports of regulated medical cannabis, okay? Our focus is entirely medical cannabis. And that at the moment, because the world is not the world is still opening up in terms of its understanding of medical cannabis, really at the moment restricts ourselves to not very many markets. So at the moment, we're really speaking about the European community, the UK, Canada, and not much more. I mean, you could make an argument that you could export to South Africa, to Australia, et cetera, but those markets are still very, very small and very far away. So really, the main customers at the moment would be the European community, the UK, and Canada for the purposes of refined medical cannabis. We've already told you about standards that we want to apply for. We took a decision early on in the creation of BreedCode that we wanted to comply with the strictest of standards which exist in today's world, which currently are the ones of the European community, in particular those of Germany. So our thinking is if we can make refined cannabis oil compliant enough to be sold in Germany, then it should be compliant enough to be sold anywhere else that has a medical cannabis regulation. Okay.
Fantastic.
And our customers, we see them as being, so there are many companies in Europe at this moment that are in the market for medical cannabis products, right? So they will take this refined oil and they will finish it off into their products, right? And they will sell it within European markets as their end products. Ultimately, as the company evolves here in Colombia, our ultimate objective is also to be able to produce finished products ourselves. We might make them in Colombia, we might make them somewhere else. But the idea is that Breedco would also have finished products, which we would be able to export to whichever regulation is allowing those sorts of exports.
Fantastic. Very interesting. And Sebastian?
Let me tell you about our experience with that. Now, Richard, I need to explain how the banks work within the cannabis sector, because that may not allow you to do any rosca or tajada. Yeah. The thing is that basically the federal government considers cannabis as illegal. Now, for that reason, you know, like if you are a legal company in California, you cannot put your money on a bank. You just use cash. For that reason, you know, back in 2016, we had a bank account with Bancolombia. But since they are a public company in the U.S., they basically got a letter from the U.S. government telling them, gentlemen, you are opening bank accounts, cannabis bank accounts down there in Colombia. Now, rather you shut down those bank accounts or we shut you down here as a public company. Now, that leaves us with a big problem. Since there are only two banks opening bank accounts for cannabis companies here in Colombia. Now, the very first one is Banco Agrario, which is a state bank, but their correspondent are the HSBC and the Citibank in New York. So you can only use that bank nationally. But then that leaves you with the BBVA, Banco Bilbao Vizcaya, which is a public company in the IBEX in Spain. Now, they are a European bank and not related to the US. Now, let me tell you that before, at some point last year, there were about 42 companies having a bank account, a cannabis bank account, around 42 companies with a BBVA bank. But in our case, unless we got a quota granted by the Colombian government, the BBVA wouldn't allow us to use our bank account. It was kind of a frozen bank account. Yeah, we could just, mention that we had it, but not using it. Now, we had to be 5 months without moving or paying a single Colombian peso. Now, any other company or many companies got desperate for that. Now, many of them, we had to be 5 months without paying salaries or rent. Everyone gets desperate for that. Now, what many companies started doing was, let's say they opened a glass company, or factory, and then monetizing and sending all that money to that other company. Now, the BBVA pays a very strict compliance on every single company. Whenever they come, it's about seven of them interviewing every single employee, talking to our accountant. And let's imagine that they went and visited this other company, and then they found out that they built, let's say, greenhouses. And they were like, how did you build that? Since I know how much money you've got and the way you spend it, I don't understand how you started building that. Now, that's basically called money laundering, technically. Yeah. Now, the big issue here is that ever since this crisis happened, and the BBVA, and I understand them pretty well because they are taking a risk on our side, they basically understood that they had to be very careful with everything. Now, when that happened, it's just a few bunch of companies having a bank account. We are one of them. This leaves no range or no possibility for any of us to give tajada or anything like that, or rosca. The reason why is because, even my personal, and I handle them myself. Now, they do not request about my personal bank accounts reports, but I do handle them because I want to give transparency. Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about tajada and rosca, and this is also, the banks won't let anything like that happen. They've got a very strict compliance team researching and making investigations on every single company. Now, basically, a company with a bank account, you can start trusting them because they are passing very strict compliance sanctions, the ones I'm telling you. But later on, everyone, and this is something that everyone's talking about in the media, buying licenses. Mm. Now, and that's basically the reason why the Colombian government isn't granting many licenses.
Okay.
Now, let me explain to you what started happening at some point. Many of the people and companies requesting licenses weren't really a company willing to go operative. They were just shell companies.
Mm.
Yeah, empty shells to be sold later on. Now, that's the reason why the Colombian government is changing the law. And if you are requesting a license, you have to keep it at least 20% of it. because many people started, you know, like, and this, you know, imagine being a BBVA or a Ministerio de Justicia expert and visiting the company and then finding out that it was on a garage, nothing there, you know, or an empty place. You know, there were some addresses that it didn't even exist.
Yeah.
Now, that's a big issue for them, you know. So, you know, the Colombian government is also learning together with us. Mm-hmm. Now, once they visit you right from the beginning, they didn't understand what extraction was, CO2. But right now, you get a visit from the BBVA, and they start talking about all the details, you know, that it's not common that everyone, that they know about this. Now, that same process...
They've had to become cannabis experts themselves.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And the Colombian government also started learning, because there were many people requesting licenses, mm-hmm. you know, all the time, and they didn't understand what was happening with them. And then they suddenly realized that they were shell companies with no employees or nothing like that, you know, mm-hmm. and they were granting licenses just like that. So at some point, the Colombian government stopped and started analyzing, like, hey, we can't start granting licenses just like that. Let me give you an example. Companies requesting a laboratory, which was drawn on a Word file. Yeah. And that they didn't even have or consider the GMPs, you know, the good manufacturing practices standards. And then they started to understand that, hey, there are these GMPs. We cannot start granting a license just like that, you know. So the process started to be more complex, and they started examining and taking more time to grant a license for a psychoactive substance like THC.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I'm afraid we have to bring it to a close. It's been phenomenally informative, stuff that I really didn't know about this industry at all, and I can only expect it's going to grow and grow and grow. I believe your website is www.breedco.com.co, so you can check it out. And let me say thank you so much to Sebastian Gámez, the COO of Breedco, and he's down there in Cali. And, of course, to Don Bellamy for taking his time and his evening there in London, who is a member of the board of Breedco as well. Thank you so much for sharing this information with us. It's been really fascinating.
Fantastic, Richard. And all the best of your podcast, which I've started to follow now.
Thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere. So that's me signing
off.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you. Signing off this week with Sebastian Gámez in Cali and Don Bellamy in London. This has been episode 314. Fantastic. Check out the website, breedco.com.co. Stuff I really didn't know about this industry at all. We'll be back next week with further interviewees talking about something to do with Colombia. And of course, please feel free to throw a couple of dollars a month at the Patreon campaign to continue the Colombia Calling podcast to help us grow and improve week in, week out for your listening pleasure all the time. Thank you again and goodbye.